Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System Podcast 82. This is our US Open DraftKings show. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour preview at Golf Betting System. And I'm honoured this morning to have European Tour expert Paul Williams on board. Good morning, Paul.
Morning, Steve. How's things?
I'm all good. I know that you're set to go with your DraftKings teams. You've been busy researching and building.
Trying to find that elusive six-man team that's going to do the business this week.
Absolutely. Golfbettingsystem.co.uk is our website, naturally available on social media. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. We've had about, I don't know, a good 50, 75 people join the group already in US Open tournament week. So don't hesitate, come across. You can follow me on Twitter at Bamford Golf. You can follow Paul at Golf Betting. Look out for the Golf Betting System YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. This podcast is available on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, Audioboom, and a myriad of different pod channels. Please take time to rate and review us on iTunes, and naturally I will read them out at the start of next week's show. It is true that the ratings and reviews on iTunes is our currency, and that's the currency of podcasts. So if you could spare the time to give us a rating and a review, that would be much appreciated. Leave your name in the review so we can read it out on our next podcast. That is something that our friend Hans Gievers from Florida has done for us. He's written, "Best Golf Podcast" is the title, 5 stars. In my opinion, these gentlemen are without doubt the best in the business. That's praise, isn't it, Paul?
Very nice.
Thank you, Steve, for backing Shane Lowry last week. I won a FanDuel tournament largely due to having Lowry in my lineup. He was largely overlooked by the DFS community. Cheers. And that's from Hans in Florida. Thanks, Hans.
Yeah, thanks, Hans. And it's nice to see that some of the content that we talk about, some of the players that we mention or back from a betting perspective actually translate to decent DFS points, as you'd expect, and some of you guys profiting from it. So that's all good as well. So, yeah, nice one, Hans. Thanks for that. And well done with your FanDuel win last week.
I think you and I do look at things differently to a lot of people in the DFS community. I think living over here in the United Kingdom might have an element of that because we're a nation of bettors rather than DraftKings players. So I don't think we're quite as statistically or model orientated. So someone like Shane Lowry last week, if you looked at him in a model with season-long statistics driving that, he isn't impressive. And he's the kind of player that would never be impressive statistically, Shane Lowry, because he has bad weeks and he has exceptional weeks.
Yeah.
So, you know, that kind of pick comes more from knowledge of where Shane Lowry plays his best golf and the kind of courses he likes. And you build that into your selection rather than just looking at strokes gain numbers.
Yeah, and I think because we're predominantly approaching it from a betting perspective, you know, for 90% of the time, you know, notwithstanding we do our bit with DFS and, you know, we're both avid DraftKings players anyway. But aside from that, if you're approaching it mainly from a betting perspective, I think it does throw up some different names and perhaps it makes your lineups more risky because I think backing players in the outright markets, outright betting markets, is a different game because you'll accept that some of them will miss the cut. But then that week that they have a good week, you might find they finish top 5, top 8, whatever it is you're trying to achieve to land your bet. Of course, a missed cut from a DraftKings perspective is bad news. So perhaps it leads to more risky lineups if you follow that logic, you know, all the way down to the picks that we put up from a betting perspective. But equally, if they land, then perhaps you're going for that contrarian view that then lands you a big prize. It's an interesting angle.
We've got some questions here, Paul, before we crack on. So thank you for those questions. The first one is from Haller Derg. His Twitter handle is at Haller Derg, so why don't give him a follow? Who do you think are who is the most likely to make the cut at $6,900 and below?
Yeah, it's a critical price point, isn't it? Because I mean, I've gone through and I've built a few lineups already, and you inevitably end up with that final spot where you're trying to fill, and it's going to be someone in that kind of bracket. And I ended up with two actually down there that I felt really quite comfortable with. Eric Van Rooyen and Danny Willett were the two that I've put, and I've probably used them probably too heavily so far in the lineups that I've built. So I need to be a little bit more less reliant on those two. But Van Rooyen has shown some decent form. Six top 20s in his last nine. I mean, that's decent form enough for a DraftKings perspective. 17th in the Open Championship, remember, last year. He was really quite prominent, wasn't he, for a long spell of that that Open Championship. Eighth of the PGA recently. Second for driving accuracy in Canada last time out, which caught my eye as well. So, I mean, from an outright perspective, if you're betting on him, then you're looking around about 150-1, which was reasonably tempting, I must say. I don't think he's got the minerals to get himself over the line in a major just yet. He's a talented boy though. But yeah, could he kind of top 15, top 10? I think there are far worse shouts actually out there than Van Rooyen. And Danny Willett is another one, 6'8". I mean, his price hasn't been. He was priced prior to the Canadian effort, so that price point at the bottom there is probably a little bit false. He should probably be a little bit higher than that. But I can see Danny making the cut as well. We know from Danny's perspective that he's got the ability to contend, and well, clearly he won the green jacket, didn't he? So I think of the players at that kind of price point, they're the two that I would veer towards anyway.
He's a pure grinder, isn't he, Willett?
Yeah, I think the conditions kind of suit him. I think it's going to be Northern European style weather and conditions. It's not going to touch 20 Celsius. It's going to be below 70 Fahrenheit for the week.
Yeah,
it's not going to be overly windy, but it's going to be far more akin to a kind of a British test. I think that's a British seaside test. It's going to feel a bit like that, I think, for these players. And these guys that have been brought up in that kind of with that kind of golf are going to feel quite at home. And yeah, I like Danny's price point this week, must say. Danny Moore,
he's at exactly the same price as Bjørn Olsen. And
yeah,
we know with Olsen, he blows very, very cold and very, very hot, and he seems to be having a post Ryder Cup qualification, very cold season.
Yeah, he's a tough one.
And in a DraftKings sense, you'd take Willett every day of the week over Olsen right now, just for that thought of getting through those first two rounds. Don't forget, I mean, this US Open, don't bear this in mind, a lot of this field is of very poor quality. And it does feel achievable to be able to get 6 of 6 through to the payout rounds Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah,
if you're very, very sensible about who you pick. Any love for Bernd Wiesberger? He's been rejuvenated of recent, isn't he?
Yeah, he has, and he got a late call up to come into the to play the event as well. And he's a good greens in regulation merchant when his game's on, and it has been, clearly has been. He won recently, and he's been improving. I do think this is going to be won or lost on and around the greens. I think so many greens are going to be missed this week, and even the winners are going to be struggling to get high into the 60s in terms of greens in regulation. And when Bernd wins, it tends to be when he's able to shoot kind of 80-85% greens in regulation, and it's not putting any pressure on his short game.
Yeah, okay.
And I don't think anyone's going to find that kind of level this week. If someone gets into the 70s in terms of greens regulation, then that's hats off. It's proper applauding stats for that kind of level. So if he does that, then he's going to get close to it. But no, not for me, I don't think.
in my technical ranking, so based upon the last 5 years, these are guys across the PGA Tour, solely PGA Tour, including World Golf Championship, of course, majors. The highest ranking player that I'm seeing, sub 7,000, is Charles Howell III. But he seems to have gone into a real slump at the moment, and his pebble record is very, very poor.
Yeah, he used to be a kind of one of these reliable top 10, you know, 8th, 10th, 12th type finishers. And for this kind of task, he's always a good shout, and particularly at the price, 6-9. But as you say, he's been right off the boil, hasn't he?
I've got
a feeling there was a niggling little injury that was bothering him as well. So, it's not one I can go near at that price level, I don't think.
One player I mentioned to you last week when I was digging through Pebble Beach averages. I'm going to put a link through to this. We're going to talk about this in more detail in a little while. But I'm going to reference a player at the moment who is playing outstanding golf on the web.com tour. And he had a couple of seasons on the PGA Tour, and he was a decent enough standard. But he has caught fire. And you often get in these US Opens a player of the like, I'm trying to remember some in the past, a Sam Burns, a player that's been playing lights out on the web.com, gets a top 25 at the US Open, goes back to the web.com, and then wins another web.com title.
Yeah.
And I can see someone like the ilk of Luke Guthrie doing very much the same this week.
Yeah.
What price have we got Guthrie at? I'm trying to find Guthrie.
Six, yeah. And he's got a couple of solid efforts at Pebble. His recent form, was at 3 top sixes in his last 5 outings on the web.com. So reasonable enough. It's whether that translates to a US Open test. That's the challenge.
He's a 26 and a 35th at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am here, and he averages 70.5 across his pure Pebble Beach form, which actually lists him alongside the likes of Adam Scott and Justin Rose, Mark Leishman. So that's pretty decent company for Luke Guthrie. I think just when you're playing great golf and you're high on confidence, I could just see someone like Luke Guthrie, not challenging, but certainly making the cut and certainly generating some half-decent DraftKings points.
Yeah, so I mean, in the same
point that came to my mind potentially.
Yeah, and with the same kind of concept, Scottie Scheffler's been playing well on the web.com as well, hasn't he? And 27th on his last US Open start the year before last as well. So, you know, if you're looking for a player who's playing some decent golf at that lower level, who could sneak in, make the cut for that kind of price, that's a bonus. And then if he's getting into the top 30, top 20, then he's making you some decent points then, isn't he?
Right, a question from Hans Gievers, at Gievers Golf on Twitter. Give him a follow. What do you think of Scott Piercy at 7,000 and CT Pan at 7,100? Personally, my personal view, I would take Pan over Piercy right now. Pan, a lot of experience at Torrey Pines. I know that he used to play a lot of junior golf at Torrey Pines. Did very well in the Junior World Championships there. Had a top 10 at Torrey Pines on his course debut there a couple of years ago. Bearing in mind that Torrey Pines is the longest PGA Tour course on the schedule, and CT Pan is one of the shortest hitters on the schedule. It just shows you he has a like for Poana Greens, and he's a good putter. He's in decent nick at the moment, Pan. I'm not saying that Piercy isn't, but I just think Pan, with his excellent short game and his very good approach game, around a course where he can probably sneak a driver down there because he's accurate off the tee. He can sneak driver, get to the kind of spots on the fairways that you need to for your second shot approaches. I think I'd take Pan at 7-1 over Piercy personally.
Yeah, see, I've gone completely the other way. I've used Piercy in a few of my teams. What put me off a little bit with Pan was his only attempt at Pebble, he's missed the cut. His major record is 2 missed cuts from 2. So it just, I mean, he's playing some far better golf now, and I get that, I understand that. I just felt to me, Piercy's got that little bit of quality in terms of US Open history. He was second back in 2016, wasn't it? Late into the field, but recently, second to Byron, wasn't he, where he went bogey-free for the entire 4 days. Mm. You know, if you're avoiding bogeys around the US Open, then that's a huge, huge plus. 10th at Pebble early this year as well. So, I've gone completely the other way. So I'm not sure that answers your question at all, Hans, unfortunately. But perhaps if you fancy either or of those, then mix them up in your teams.
There's no definitives, are there?
No, absolutely.
And another one from Hans. Curious if you guys think Brian Stewart has the potential for a top 25 this week. He's only 6,600 on DraftKings. Now, his name did pop up on our Pebble top 10 data, of which I'll go into in a little bit more detail. But he, of the guys that have played a minimum of 8 competitive rounds at Pebble Beach from 2011 through 2019, our friend Brian Stewart ranks in 5th spot with an average of 70.11. My concern with that being that clearly that is played to a resort golf kind of standard where you've got pro-am and amateurs playing on a course that's soft and very attackable. I don't see a lot in Brian Stewart's history that suggests he's a good US Open player. But this is going to be quite a specialised test in terms of Pebble Beach and the way that it stacks up with a standard US Open course. So, yeah, I could potentially see Stewart sneaking through I don't know about top 25, but certainly making the cut. I can see that potentially.
Yeah, the little bit that's off-putting with Stewart is that of his 4 US Open attempts, he has missed the cut on each occasion, but perhaps this is a little bit more up his alley. Yeah. He is driving the ball well at the moment, and that's evident in his stats. And he's a decent short game player, which, again, as we've said, I think is going to be a critical part of the mix this week. So, at that kind of price, there's no reason to ignore him, I don't think, if you're looking for someone in that 6-6 bracket to fill
there's
one of your teams.
There's worse down there, isn't there?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
There's worse, Anna. I mean, I've got Pat and Kazire at 6-7 or Ollie Schneider Jans. I wouldn't be touching either of those personally. But, the other one, who might make a stand down at 6-6, and really it does tend to what way he gets out of bed in the morning, is Luke Donald. Mm. You have got a lot of experience there. Ex-world number one. Major top 5 performer, and he's sitting there at 6-6, and we know that there's been a rejuvenation from Luke on certain outings recently.
Yeah, he's not really been stringing it together for 4 full rounds over recent weeks, has he? But there have been signs and again that he's finding some game. And
hit some fairways, we know that his short game is still absolutely exemplary. Yeah, if he's hitting 33.3% GIR, he's going to miss the cut. And this is that is the risk with Luke.
Yeah.
Any love for Marcus Kinault down there as well, who is we know over here on the European Tour, he's a real Lynx golf specialist, isn't he, Kinault?
Yeah, US Open debut. It's a tough one, I think, for anyone on their debut for this, who's not a... class as a proper elite player, I guess, coming through to make the US Open debut. If he makes the cut, then I think that'll be a real positive for him, for him in his career. But I wouldn't be using him down there, I don't think.
Okay. Right, we've spoken about sub 7,000. What I'm going to highlight right now, before we actually start going into players more towards the top of the salary, US Open free entry, no deposit offer from DraftKings for new players this week. So if you're one of the guys that tends to bet and a regular punter on golf, but you haven't played DraftKings, this week is a very, very good week to get involved with DraftKings. I will put a link in the description box through to their new customer offer. If you're listening to this on YouTube, that won't be available. But if you're listening to this across a host of different podcast outlets, it will be available to you.
Yeah, and if you're looking on or you're watching it on YouTube, then pop along to our Twitter handles because we've put the link on there over the last day or two. So you'll be able to pick the link to the free contest up off of Twitter.
It's also available on our right hand nav on our actual website. So just click any link through in the description box and you'll get through to the content and you'll see the DraftKings offer on the right hand side. So basically, for new customers this week, if you fancy trying DraftKings at the US Open with no deposit required, there's a total of $5,000 in prizes up for grabs. And entry is totally free. So, as I say, if you've ever fancied trying DraftKings, this week is an excellent opportunity to do that. I know a number of you joined. They had a similar offer at the PGA Championship, and I know a number of you joined via Golf Betting System and took up that offer for the first time. The first prize in that new player league is actually $1,000. So it's completely free to enter, and you do not need to make a deposit to actually access that new player contest at the US Open.
It's as you say, they ran it at the US PGA, but they've improved it since because the top prize at the US PGA was $100, I believe. And they've changed the prize structure now. So the top prize is $1,000.
Okay.
And all the way down to 1,268th place will get a return of for $1.50 upwards, depending where you finish.
Can you see now, how many people have entered at the
moment? Yeah, right now we've got 818 entries. So at the moment, everyone who's entered so far, literally everybody, is in the money.
Now, we're recording this, just to make you aware, 9:30 UK time, we're recording this on Wednesday morning. Mm-hmm. So basically what Paul's saying is if you enter at the moment, you're guaranteed some kind of return. Now, that might not be the case when this goes live on Thursday, but there is an opportunity there for you to play completely free of charge, no deposit, and there's $5,000 up for grabs in that particular league. So I think it's a good offer.
Yeah, excellent. Particularly if you've not played before and you're just a bit curious about how it all works, just pop along, have a play, and there's no risk there, is there? It's just
exactly. Free, I think what we'll also... We'll also put in the description box, Paul, a link through to your DraftKings Explained article, which is consistently available on the website. Okay, I'll tell you where I was going to start with this. We did some analysis last week around Pebble Beach, top 10 scoring averages. You know, I've alluded to this already.
Yep.
Went dug in real detail. It took about a day and a half to get to it. I can see why no one else did it. But it's been well received on Twitter, this analysis. A lot of people have used it across the DFS and betting communities. So what we did, we basically looked at all of the AT&T Pebble Beach National Pro-Am events that occur here every February. And I drew a line at the US Open and said anything this side of the US Open. So we started in 2011 right through to this year, 2019. And we went through all of the tee listings to see... Pebble Beach only scores from people in the US Open field. Now, in certain cases, it's actually one round only. So you have to bear all this in mind. But we've also done a list for players where we've actually cut it to a minimum of 8 rounds around Pebble Beach since 2011. So I'll just read you out the top 10s. For the list... of players where there is no minimum round requirement. So we've got a couple in here who have only played one single round, but bear that in mind. Gary Woodland ranks out at 1 at 68. Then we have Daniel Berger at 2, Xander Schauffele at 3, Brandon Grace and Paul Casey tied at 4. 6 is Brant Snedeker, and that is worthy of note on the basis he's played 12 rounds around here. Next up, tied, is Aaron Rise, Brooks Koepka. See, I got it right, Paul. And John Rahm. And then finally, in 10th spot, is one Jimmy Walker.
And Jimmy's played a lot of rounds as well.
Oh, mate. 12 rounds in that time. If you take that from an 8 competitive rounds perspective, so anyone who's played less than that isn't listed. I'll go in reverse order on this. 10 Holmes, JB. 9 Patrick Reed, tied with Jason Day. Then we've got Jordan Spieth. Phil Mickelson at 6. Brian Stewart at 5. Interesting, as we said earlier. Mm-hmm. Even more interesting in my mind, and one that I wouldn't really consider for a US Open, is Sam Saunders. Good old Sam Saunders. And we know with Sam, put him on a golf course where you can hit 9 birdies and 3 bogeys. He's quite competitive, isn't he, Sam? Mm. I don't know if that translates to a US Open. When he's in the top 10 after sort of Friday, people can shoot me for that comment. 3 is Dustin Johnson. 2 is Jimmy Walker. And 1 is Brandt Snedeker. Just, I'm pinning nothing on these numbers, but it's very, very simple to look at this and say, oh, you know, his record at the Pebble Beach Pro-Am is absolutely atrocious. But actually, when you dig into it, there's names there like Xander Schauffele, who missed the cut on his one ever appearance at the Pro-Am, but actually his best round was a 69 three under. You think, okay. So clearly he can get around the course if circumstances are in the right spot.
Yeah.
That piece of analysis, again, is available in the podcast description box, and it has proved rather popular.
Yeah, I think it's good background, isn't it? Because we are playing a track that is used every year for a regular PGA Tour event, and clearly some players pop up more than others on that particular track. And, you know, I think it's interesting that your analysis has driven out players that have consistently performed well around Pebble. And whether that translates to US Open this week, we shall see. But end of the day, it's the same track with the same sight lines, with the same routing, isn't it? It's just it's going to be set up a little bit different to how it is back in February when it's softer and clearly earlier in the season.
I think a lot of people are taking on board the fact that at the 2010 US Open, 8 out of the top 11 finishers all had top 10s at Pebble.
Yeah.
Some people are taking that on board. Some people kind of say, oh, that's all fair and good, but you know, we're 9 years down the line and golf's changed slightly. So it's, you know, this is it. You make your own decisions, don't you?
Yeah.
Should we talk the top 4 in the market?
Mm.
We've spoken about some scrubs, haven't we? Should we talk about the big boys?
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, we've got 6, haven't we? We're 10,000 and above. Mm. So Koepka, DJ, Woods, McIlroy, Spieth, and the massively well-backed and fancied Patrick Cantlay, who's over here in the UK, has been tipped up by all and sundry, and his price in the outright market is plummeting like a stone.
You told me this morning you thought his price was obscene.
I think it is obscene, obscenely short.
I don't think I've ever seen him at 10 million either in DraftKings. That's a new departure for him as well, isn't it?
10K is, yeah, that's I mean, and that's representative of where he is in the outright market. I'm seeing him as short as 14-1 to win his first major championship. I'm seeing Tiger Woods in places at 14-1 at the moment. This is the guy who won by 15 shots back in 2000.
Has 15 majors behind him. Mm. I had a serious think about putting him in my betting tips this week, as you would, but in the end, there were a certain amount of things that put me off, one of them being that price. Yeah. But yes, we've got six players there in that super price point. Where do you stack up with them? I'm going to run through some stats in a couple of seconds just to say where their games are from an approach and around the green perspective. But what are your feelings about the Big Six this week? Who would you be building, or who have you built teams around, and who have you discarded this week?
I think you've got to take a view on them, haven't you? Because you could end up with an awful lot of teams if you try and build permutations with all six in. I've swerved Brooks Koepka, I've swerved Jordan Spieth, I've swerved Patrick Cantlay. I mean, Brooks, whether, firstly, if he wins this week, that's three on the trot for the US Open. That's, I remember you quoted some stat that it's not happened for like 100 years or whatever the number was, and it's going back an awful long time. That's
Willie Anderson, wasn't it? Willie Anderson. 1902 through 04 or something.
Yeah. If Brooks Koepka wins the US Open for the third time in the trot, and his recent major championship form, you can't dispute it. You can't dispute his game. Whether a firm and fast Pebble Beach really suits his game, where his biggest asset, his long, accurate enough driving, isn't going to be such a factor here, because players are all going to be pretty much playing from the same kind of position. They're, depending whichever club you choose, they're all going to be attacking from roughly the same kind of spot, assuming they hit the fairways. Yes, he's had one attempt at Pebble Beach. He finished eighth here. GMAC, when he won in 2010, his best effort, his best finishing at Pebble Beach was eighth. There's some correlation there. But for top price, and he is going to be popular, of course, given his major pedigree of late, I'm happy to go one side and leave him out all of my lineups this week. Jordan Spieth, another one. I mean, his putting of late, his strokes game putting has been elevating rapidly over the last few months, it will need to be exceptional this week. His short game will need to be exceptional if he's going to contend. That's not to say he can't, because if he does do that and the rest of his game is adequate enough, then perhaps he will. But I think Poana is his weakest suit in terms of putting surfaces, and I don't think his long game is going to be good enough this week to see him through. And Patrick Cantlay is just far too expensive for me.
I'm relating your words to Tiger Woods, and I watched Tiger Woods' full press conference yesterday. Because you glean some good information from Tiger. This is exactly what he said about Pebble Beach. How do you put the ball in the correct position is the key. These greens, we don't face greens like this small and this steep. And so it puts a premium on iron play, because I feel like most of the field can drive the ball in the fairways. They're pretty wide. The golf course is not overly long. It's where to put the ball in the right spots so you can have some putts that are uphill and birdieable. And he also says, the longer guys will be hitting a shorter club this week, the shorter guys will be able to sneak a driver down there. We're all playing from the same spots.
Yeah.
And it's that phrase that I think is critical to get your head around when you're looking at these guys at the top of the market, isn't it? Because what Tiger's effectively saying there, in my mind, is that someone like Brooks Koepka, who can overpower a golf course, that's how he won the US Open at Erin Hills. That's how he won the US Open at Shinnecock. That's how he won the two PGA Championship titles. That option is null and void at Pebble Beach.
Mm-hmm.
So then we're looking at key stats, aren't we? We're looking at player characteristics. And here you go. I'm taking the top six. And I'll just run through the players in that top six category. These are their strokes gained around the green and strokes gained on approach. I'll start with approach. Woods 13th on approach, strokes gained. McIlroy 5th. Johnson 16th. Koepka 11th. Cantlay 10th. So there you go, look. I mean, they're all much of a muchness with their irons and their longer woods here into greens, right?
Yeah.
Jordan Spieth, 144th.
Yeah, but that kind of backs up the point I made. Yeah, that backs entirely reliant on his short game at the moment.
So then we think to ourselves, well, okay, we're going to be missing lots and lots of greens this week. Who's got a short game? Tiger Woods, 8th. McIlroy, 40th. Dustin Johnson, 52nd. Brooks Koepka, 119th, strokes gained around the green. Patrick Cantlay, 13th. Jordan Spieth, 37th. If you looked at that around the green number for Jordan Spieth over his last 2 to 3 performances, that'd be far, far better than that. But then he was starting from a base of about 180th.
When we actually started May.
He's around the game, around the green game at the moment, is at a different level. But you see, those numbers are interesting to me. So if you're looking at it statistically, from a kind of who's consistent right now on both elements of the game, you would be looking at Cantlay, you would be looking at Tiger Woods. They're the two standouts in of the top six. There's weaknesses there for Koepka. I'm not sure that there's a statistical weakness for Rory McIlroy, but the trouble with Rory is, and as this is well known, that on any golf course that where a single-digit winning score is going to be the actual total that's required, McIlroy doesn't appear at the top of leaderboards. And it kind of goes back to what Tiger was saying, because, again, Rory's game is built on dominating from the tee. Getting his ball into positions on the fairway that most of the rest of the field can't get to, and then of course his approach play with with shorter irons in hand actually basically takes him to a different level, doesn't it? And if he makes some putts, which he does, you know, sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. When he does, he's unbeatable, isn't he? And that's exactly what we saw in Canada.
Yeah, and that Canada, it does throw the cat amongst the pigeons, that winning cat at Canada, doesn't it? Because, again, his price was established before that. He's now moved to favourite or joint favourite in terms of the outright betting. Yet he's 1,000, 1,100 lighter than Brooks Koepka at the top. I will further use Rory in some of my teams. I won't go overweight on him, but I will use him in some because I can't disregard him. I can't disregard that performance last week, because if he does hit it as well again from tee to green, if his wedges are as strong as they were last week, and as you say, if he finds sufficient putts, then he's not going to be far away at all. I don't think it really lends itself to being, you know, to appealing to his strengths. Same as Koepka, as you say, it's, you know, it does nullify his strengths to a degree. But when he finds top gear, Rory, he can produce consecutive wins. We've seen it before. When was it, back in 2014 when he won the, it was the Open then, Akron, wasn't it? And then he won the USPGA after that. Three on the trot. I think he got two on the trot of the playoffs back in 2012 as well, didn't he? So when he finds top form, Rory, he can continue to produce the goods. I won't go overweight on him. I think it's just to try and keep him, you know, around about 20% of the teams, I think, are going to be the trick for me.
For me, the player of the top six that I'm going to be relying on the most would be Tiger Woods.
Yep, no, I agree.
Would you place
15 shot win?
Yeah. Who would you place in second of the top six?
Purely on the strength of his Pebble Beach record, Dustin Johnson.
Dustin Johnson, yeah.
I mean, 20th last week, he didn't break sweat last week, did he? It was just purely a spin for four rounds. It was from a position where he looked like he could miss the cut, clearly wanted to play a bit of golf, made the cut and just kind of ambled his way through to 20th spot. His conversion rate at the majors for actually winning major championships from the positions he's been in is poor. And again, if you're looking at him from an outright betting perspective, it's not for me. But in terms of a player who is pretty likely to be in a strong scoring position from a DraftKings perspective, I think Dustin Johnson's going to be up there. So
this week is all going to be about final position, though. Again, isn't it a bit like the PGA? Do you think? Where you know, if you're spending this kind of money, you're picking the winner, aren't you? First and second. I know that the winning team, the millionaire maker at the PGA, have both Koepka and DJ in it.
Yeah, and I think that was the only way to get close to a winning total. And you know, it may well be a similar scenario now where you need to get a couple of guys who are going to finish first and second. And
so you're going DJing Woods in that circumstance, are you?
The way that I've structured a lot of my teams are either DJ Woods, Rory Woods, or Woods and a couple of players who are in the nine or high eight bracket as a starting point, it does put massive pressure on you picking the right players at the kind of the low sevens and high sixes. And I think that's where it's going to be won and lost this week from a DraftKings perspective.
Okay. I'm with you on those. I'm with you on Dustin Johnson and McIlroy, certainly. I'm with you on Dustin Johnson and Woods. For me, of the top six, in my own mind, I would prioritise someone like Spieth over McIlroy. I can see Spieth grinding his way around to a top six, top seven finish. I could see McIlroy. I could see him mid-pack. I really could, because I just don't think this is his kind of golf.
Yeah, as I say, I'm not going to go mad on him. I've got this nagging doubt that he can continue his form for a second week, and if he does, I want to have
of course, I understand.
Enough teams out there.
And this is it. You can build that kind of situation in where you know. The sort of elephant in the room there is potentially Cantlay, who's clearly the biggest form horse on the planet right now.
Yep.
But his numbers stack up. He's got a top 10 at Pebble Beach. A lot of people think he's going to win it this week. So a lot of people will be shouting into their computer or their device that they're listening to, why aren't you prioritising Cantlay near the top of these top six? But I don't know. I don't know. It's just it's a tough read, isn't it? You need someone that, I don't know. It's difficult. Very, very difficult. I can't say much more than that.
No. There's no justifiable reason to oppose him. That's the biggest challenge with this. And even the numbers that you read through a second ago.
Oh yeah.
From tee to green, is there? His short game is on point. He's got the form. He's got the smattering of Pebble Beach form as well. It's the pricing is probably right, but it just doesn't fit comfortably for me personally.
Okay. Now, who else around that kind of 9,000 and above mark are you tapping into this week? We're talking Molinari, Jason Day, John Rahm, it won't be him, Justin Thomas, Ricky Fowler, Justin Rose. Any interest in those guys? Or are you thinking that that's a kind of range that you can actually jump below?
Yeah.
From there.
There's not a lot that interests me there, I must say, because Justin Rose is struggling with his irons, and that's not really his game, is it? Ricky Fowler probably gets into top 20 or thereabouts, but is that good enough at this price? Justin Thomas is still recovering from that injury, isn't he? Rahm, as you say, has he got the mentality for a US Open? Not convinced. And Francesco Molinari, Colonial, he only just struggled to hit 50% of greens in regulation, and that's...
I know, and that's his bread and butter.
Yeah, absolutely. That's
and his putting was back to standard, wasn't it? He was missing plenty of 4-foot birdies on the par fives.
Yeah. And that's got to prop him up.
I wouldn't touch Molinari with yours, personally.
No. It does worry me that his stats and his performances of late just don't seem to be there.
Jason Day has clearly got a great record around here, and he's now got Steve with him in terms of caddying. Steve Williams. Do you see any bounce back from Day?
The one that I have included in a number of teams, a few teams, is Jason Day.
Mm.
The problem with Day is he could win the tournament or he could withdraw. And you're taking a risk with him. But I think when you're trying to make inroads into a big GPP, then I think risks need to be taken here and there. And this is a risk that I'm willing to take in a few teams. I think that Steve Williams appointment is big.
Yeah,
I think it's an important one for him. He's great on Poana, isn't he? Loves Pebble Beach, as you say. It's just his recent form hasn't been great, but then we know with Jason Day that he can just find it. And again, like Dustin Johnson, though, his conversion rate at major championships isn't the best. But would you settle from a DK perspective of getting him into a tie for fourth? Yeah, I expect so.
From memory with Steve Williams, when he teamed up with Adam Scott a few years ago, the kind of impact was immediate.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, with the knowledge and the way that Williams can motivate, Scotty started playing a lot better golf straight away. Now that could be the case with Jason Day. I can see that. I'm a little bit torn. I'm a little bit torn on Justin Thomas. It has to be said. I know that other guys out there are sweet on him. I know Pat Mayo's extremely sweet on him. Jeff Feinberg. His tee to green game in Canada was exceptional. But yes, he putted abysmally. Now you can see that warming up, but I'm not sure just looking at Justin's schedules of the past and the way that he's played Torrey Pines and the way that he's played Pebble, i.e. he really hasn't, if he's that comfortable on pure Poana greens.
Yeah.
And I've read some comments from him in previous interviews that says, yeah, he finds Poana, pure West Coast Poana, very, very difficult because clearly he's a boy from Kentucky that never grew up on that kind of surface.
Yeah.
If you throw some bent grass in there, so you get the mix of bent and Poana, like you get at Firestone, where he won a couple of years. Was it last year? I think it was last year he won at Firestone, didn't he? He can cope with that, but it's these West Coast Poana greens. So I'm kind of torn on Thomas whether to include him. I might include him in a couple of my lineups. Of that range, put that way, of that range, the only players I have interest in is either JT or JD.
Yeah.
The others, Fowler, no, Rose. I think the move that he's taken to these Honma clubs and the fact that he's had trouble with Fuch, who's now off the bag again because he's of his illness, I think that's really upset just the balance of the whole team. I wouldn't be on Rose this week. I know that's something I'm not interested in. So of those two, we're talking. You're definitely a Jason Day fan, and I'm kind of Day and Thomas.
I'm a tentative Jason Day fan, I think. But
limited exposure kind of way.
Yeah, I think he. You know, you could see that if he has a very strong week, which, you know, there are big question marks, but if he has a very strong week, I think he'll be relatively lightly owned because of the risk that's involved with taking him in any of your teams, and that could be the play that produces the pivot, really. But we'll see.
Now, are you licking your chops of the 8,000 and above range? Woodland, DeChambeau, Mickelson, Casey, Finau, Cooch, Scott, Xander, Matsuyama, Fleetwood.
There's
some interesting names in there, isn't there?
Yeah, I've certainly used a lot more of these, I must say. We had some questions about Tommy Fleetwood, and again, I think his game fits. He's got some great form at the Dunhill Links on the European Tour. He's got four top fives there, a couple of second place finishes.
Grew up in Southport, didn't he? I mean, we saw the course a few weeks ago where he grew up.
Yeah, Hillside, top 10 there, despite the fact that he was hosting and had all of those extra burden on him for the week as well. He's an interesting runner, 8-9. Hideki, I know Barry's on him, Barry from our regular podcast, and he's quite sweet on him this week. Yeah. And he's got a good, consistent US Open record, hasn't he? You know, five of his seven US Open starts have been top 20s.
Yeah.
8-8, you know, if he finishes 10th, 12th, is that reward enough? Yeah, quite possibly, I guess. Xander, I back Xander outright. I think Xander's got a chance of winning the whole tournament. And 5th and 6th in his two US Open starts is exactly what you want from a guy at 8-7, I think. You've backed Adam Scott, and again, you know, there's a good case to be made for him. He's playing some great golf, isn't he? Kuchar, I've included Kuchar in some of my teams as well. You know, he's massively consistent of late, isn't he? Yeah. Despite all of the shenanigans that are going on with him, from a personal perspective or from an on-course perspective, that really shouldn't be happening, Matt. But does that?
Then there's a couple of names that it's kind of Marmite, isn't it? If you're in America, it's kind of black and white would be the phrase in terms of some people. You know, you're either a Finau truther or you're not a Finau truther, or you're either. And over here in the UK, and I'm pretty sure it's still quite a strong view over in the States, Paul Casey. I mean, you either like him or loathe him, Paul Casey. Where are you on board with Finau and Casey? I've got a feeling you won't be touching either.
I've not touched Finau, but I can see the logic with him. And he has got a couple of mid-pack finishes at Pebble, so there's something to grab onto there, isn't he? I've played a little bit of Paul Casey. I wouldn't touch him in the outright market, but I think there's enough to justify including him a little bit here. I think he'll be largely overlooked. He withdrew on his last start with the flu. It wasn't anything major.
No.
I backed him outright that week, so that wasn't ideal, but I think he'll be largely left alone. And I think some of these European players will be largely left alone, so I think he could be a good play.
Yeah.
Lefty I've backed first round leader, but I don't think he'll stick around for the full 4 days. I think that the fact that he's going for his personal Grand Slam, if he gets into any kind of position, may well start to prey in his mind a bit. And he started well at the Masters, didn't he? He started well at the PGA, and yeah. Both times he faded away. And you know, despite his massive love for Pebble Beach, was he won 5 times around there in his career so far? It's I can't include him in a team where I think that if he does start well, he'll drift away a little bit. Bryson's an interesting one. He was far better at Memorial than he had been recently. Third for scrambling, 5 wins in the past year, and I think he could be one that's largely overlooked as well this week, 8-1. So a little smattering of Bryson in my
There was a little bit more of his normal game appearing at Muirfield Village, wasn't there?
Yeah.
I spotted that. I'm just trying to bring him up. Yeah, he was 18th for driving accuracy. He was also very good with his driving in terms of strokes gained as well. 15th for strokes gained. So that was a little bit more like the DeChambeau we're used to seeing.
Yeah.
Third for total driving. 6th for all round I've got here. Interesting.
Yeah, and your man Gary
must have putted exceptionally well.
Yeah, and when he finds his game, you know, he's a formidable player, isn't he? Yeah. And Gary Woodland topped one of your stats, didn't he? For
that average score, 68.
For Pebble, and again, there's enough to like. Again, with Gary, he's going to have to hit a lot of greens in regulation because his short game doesn't tend to be
the best
at the cup fight kind of level to compete in this. But if he can find. You know, if he can be top 5 for greens in regulation for the week and putt averagely enough and scramble well enough, then he could reward at 8,000. I haven't included him, I must say. But
on the basis this is going to be, I think, quite... I heard an interview with Kevin Kisner yesterday. And Kisner was talking about, you know, 50 degrees Fahrenheit, and it's like being on the back. It's like being in the Arctic. And that's a lot of American players will be feeling like that. I think on that basis, and we've said with Danny Willett, we've said if you've got some Open Championship or Lynx Golf heritage, I think that's going to pay huge dividends this week. So I think Tommy Fleetwood at 8-9 is a great DraftKings play. I think Xander Schauffele can play anywhere, any course, as long as it's a big major tournament. And bearing in mind he was second at the Open Championship last year on his Open debut. I think it was his Open debut. But anyway, he had minimal Open Championship experience. That says everything about Xander. That course was firm and fiery, wasn't it, over the weekend?
Yeah.
And he mixed it with the very best. So I've got no issues with Xander in my teams this week. I'm not sure about Matsuyama. I think Kuchar's a very consistent play. And I think, lo and behold, it would be difficult not to include Paul Casey in some lineups as well, like you have. They're the four that are jumping out in that range for me.
Mm.
Fleetwood, X-Man, Cooch, and Paul Casey.
Yeah. Xander, for me, is the one that I've played most heavily out of that, I must say. I think he's got a good chance of having a very good week this week.
Right. We're into a very juicy bracket then, aren't we? From 7,000 and up. I'm not going to list them through them all. I mean, if we listed through them all, it's going to take 20 minutes. There's one player at the very base of that 7,000 and above bracket, and it's not Keegan Bradley, and it's who I'm very, very sweet on this week. I know you are. And that is Jimmy Walker, who I think's an absolute bargain. Don't you?
Yep. No, Jimmy, I've used him again in a number of my teams. He got great record at Pebble, wasn't he, full stop? But
I think what's going to happen here, you shoot me down in flames if I'm wrong, I think Brant Snedeker is going to be probably the most exposed player in the whole of DraftKings this week.
Mm.
And if you're looking for pivot plays in this kind of arena, this kind of area of the draft, I think Walker is a great play.
Yeah, there's a few, isn't there, in that bracket who played well last week, and again, their price isn't really representative of that. Snedeker's one, Shane Lowry's another.
Yeah.
Jimmy Walker did play well for patches last week. I mean, actually, his stats were far better than his finishing position, which is why I think it makes him interesting, because we've talked before about how he's been improving from off the tee, and third for total driving last week, sixth for ball striking. Are two numbers you don't tend to associate with Jimmy Walker. And you combine that with the fact that he's strong on Poana, strong on the West Coast, very strong at Pebble full stop. He's got his Pebble win.
Yeah.
Four more top tens he's got as well, I think, around Pebble
Beach. He was third for total driving and fifth for all round last week. Yeah.
Fifth for all round, yeah.
Ninth for driving, actually. That isn't a number you see with Jimmy, is it?
No, 70% scrambling as well. I mean, every aspect of his game was working, and it was only the fact that he made, I think he could have had three bogey free rounds last week. He was bogey free on Thursday, he doubled the last on Saturday, he bogeyed the last on Sunday. Outside of that, he made no bogeys. His game is very, very, very close, I think,
and tight. Yeah,
yeah, he combined that with the fact that he's coming to a course that he loves, he's got some great success on it, and he's driving the ball, he's playing from tee to green, his long game is better than it has been for a long, long time. I think there's a lot to like at Jimmy at 7,000. I've gone quite heavily into Jimmy Walker this week and backed him outright as well. I think he's a good play full stop this week.
I think there's another player in there that I've got a feeling you're going to like. I'm not sure that a lot of the DraftKings community are going to be particularly on him. He might be a little bit under the radar. Saying that, I think he's been boosted up again by Pat Mayo, is Tyrrell Hatton.
Yep.
Who is an absolute Lynx golf course animal. And he's playing good golf at the moment, Hatton.
Absolutely. I've backed Hatton outright. I think Hatton's got a chance of top 10 in this event. And as you said, if you go back to his European Tour efforts, twice a winner at the Alfred Dunhill Links. He was second last year as well. So three very strong finishes there. Sixth in this last year, and a smattering of recent form as well. Again, at 7-2, there's an awful lot to like, I think.
I think a lot of people associate the outburst that he has with kind of John Rahm, but I think Tyrrell actually can turn those outbursts into positive sort of momentum. He uses that to actually start playing better.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's an emotional sort, isn't he? But I don't think he doesn't tend to throw all of his toys out of the pram like John does, which is slightly better. And you know, from a US Open perspective, you've got to be able to channel that to a degree. Because you're going to be faced with adversity. Yeah. There's going to be tough holes. You're going to go through stretches where you can't make birdies. And, you know, you've just got to hang on for grim death, really.
He was 10th for ball striking last time out at Muirfield Village, 13th for driving accuracy, 11th for greens in regulation.
Mm-hmm.
And at the PGA Championship, 3rd for driving accuracy, 9th for greens in regulation.
Yeah.
The putter's been awful of late, it has to be said. But I don't think it's going to be a putting contest. As long as you're avoiding three putts, you're okay.
No, and he's a great mid-range putter from 20-25 feet. There are going to be times when you're making or being forced to make 20-25 footers for par this week, the chances you have for birdie may well be from mid to long range, and you've got to be able to take a few of them. And when Tyrrell gets a little bit of form, a little bit of confidence with the mid-range putts, he can make a few. Yeah, I quite fancy him to have a good week this week.
Okay, so we're on. We're both on board those particular players in that range. Anyone else? I mean, it's Brandt Schnedeker is rather obvious, isn't he? At 7-5.
Yeah,
Shane Lowry as well. You've got him up first round leader. I can definitely see that. I can see him getting a very fast start, Shane.
Yeah. No, I've played a bit of Shane. I've played a bit of Snedeker because I don't think you can dispute his facts. Matt Wallace is another one who's rapidly coming through the ranks, and he had a great showing at the PGA, didn't he? He was in the mix for the entire 4 days, didn't drop away. And ultimately finished third. He's up to 25th, 26th in the world now, and he's got his eyes set firmly on being a top 10 player, and I think that's where he's heading. I think he's got that kind of quality. And I'm happy to give him a chance this week. Again, I don't think he'll be massively over-owned. I think a lot of these Europeans won't be.
I mean, you listen to this part of this actual segment is fascinating for me. 7-5. You've got Schnedeker, Lowry, Poulter. 7-6, you've got Wallace, Bubba Watson, Henrik Stenson. And then you've got Rory Sabatini at 7-7. Whatever you do, chaps, no one put Rory Sabatini in there. His Pebbles record is absolutely shocking. And then you've also got Kevin Na and Webb Simpson. There's some really interesting players in that little segment there.
Yeah.
Where would you be in terms of... Would you take Stenson over Wallace? I know a lot of people are going to be very, very sweet on Stenson this week at 7-6. And you're putting up Wallace. I'm not sure I disagree, to be fair, because I struggle with Henrik on the basis that, yes, he'll hit tons of fairways. Yes, he'll hit a level of greens. But if he misses a green, the way that he scrambles is absolutely shocking at the moment.
Well, you say that, and then you look at his scrambling at Canada. He was 80% scrambling, and you know whether and it's a different ball game. I understand, because the scrambling conditions in Canada versus what we'll see at Pebble with chalk and cheese, but he won't have to use driver much at all this week. He can rely on his trusty three wood to get himself into position.
Yeah,
his long game did seem to be back on track in Canada using that, and as I say, he scrambled well.
But you say that for scrambling, which is a true statistic, yeah. In terms of strokes gained around the green in Canada, he was 65th.
Yeah.
So, as I often say, I how you can be in the top 10 for scrambling and virtually at the bottom for strokes gained, I don't know how that's worked out, but...
He clearly saved par and just didn't convert a number of his birdie opportunities, which... Is that a better scenario for a US Open where the pressure is more on protecting your par rather than making a string of birdies potentially? I've gone fairly even between Stenson and Wallace, and I think both of them warrant some support actually. A little bit of Kevin Na, a little bit Webb Simpson as well. I know you're keen on Simpson outright. I think there's enough to like with both of those guys.
And you've avoided Brandt like the plague.
No, I've gone quite level with him because I think he will be heavily over-owned, and I think quite rightly as well. And you could choose to completely swerve him, but I think that could be a mistake on the basis that if he finishes fifth or eighth or ninth or whatever, you know, a decent enough position, then he justifies his price at that level. And I can see that. I can see it happening.
I could see a Kevin Na top 10 as well, which at 7-7 is... Yeah, you know, he played exceptional golf at Colonial. We know he's got a couple of top fives here at Pebble.
He's
mixed it in majors, isn't he? I think it was eighth at Oakmont a few years ago at the USO.
Seventh.
He can grind.
Yeah, a little bit of Kevin Na. This is a juicy range, isn't it? As you say, because you can make a case for even the likes of Kevin Kisner, who seems to raise his game at some of the bigger events as well.
He said in the podcast, that for the Foreplay podcast, that he's going to have a decent week. He said, I'm all right. And I think last time he said that, he kind of contended at Carnoustie.
Yeah.
So he's clearly confident going in, Kisner.
Yeah. I mean, he hasn't done much since he won the match play earlier in the year. But
he's one that pops, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Keimer's shown a little bit recently. And it's interesting because the one thing that's really been letting him down lately has been his putting, and then he was second for putting at Memorial, and that's a real step in the right direction for Martin Kaymer. He's one to consider, I think.
So they're the guys that we fancy in that range.
Mm. Yeah, there's a lot. I mean,
I'd like to fancy Brandon Grace, but he's playing so badly at the moment. Yeah, I can't.
No. I mean, you can make a case for Jim Furyk again, as always. He's got some decent finishes at Pebble, hasn't he? And he's got,
yeah,
you know, US, he's got that US Open mentality, isn't he? He's that kind of player. And he's still finding fairways and greens for with ease, isn't he? It's a massively positive, consistent part of his game, even at his age.
I think there's going to be quite a few teams that are very, very sweet around this. You mean you could virtually you could build a predominant part of your lineup here just in that segment.
Yeah, you can. And I think it's interesting because you can then pick a couple of players from the top of the market, and then if you can find four players in this, you know, bracket between the high sixes and low sevens to fill the other four spots, then you can produce a team. And as you said, at the PGA Championship, that was exactly the way to complete a winning lineup. So I'm going to structure a few of my teams in that manner. Absolutely.
People often ask who are the players to swerve this week. And they say, we had some feedback, didn't we, this week? You know, in terms from a betting perspective, you know, who are your lays of the week? Who aren't going to do well this week? Yeah. From a DraftKings perspective, what landmines do you think are out there?
I'm going nowhere near Justin Rose. I'm going nowhere near John Rahm. I'm not going near him, but I've got serious doubts about Francesco Molinari. They're three strong players who, you know, could and perhaps should contend, but Sergio Garcia has missed seven majors on the trot, I think, in terms of his missed cuts. Again, it's another one
called shocking.
Yeah, Bubba Watson's another one I'm going nowhere near.
Rory Sabatini, don't mention him as well.
he's been playing some decent enough stuff, but yeah, I'll get your point with Sabatini. There's a lot you can make a tentative case for, but there's a few of the guys that I really can't go anywhere near whatsoever.
Yeah, can't disagree with that. I might add Ricky Fowler to that list if I was being really, really vicious.
I can see Ricky top 20,
top
I think.
Top 20, but you need a bit more at 9-5, don't you?
Yeah, you do. You do. And you know, if you're particularly sweet on Ricky, I can see a justification for including him, but it needs to be 8th rather than 18th to make it count, really.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing on any of those names you mentioned, it has to be said. Right, I think that's just about us then, isn't it?
Yeah, lots to ponder. A few more lineups to try and complete, I think.
I don't see any differentials in terms of weather and timings and tee times, whatever. It seems fairly consistent, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. The wind's not going to be a major factor this week, looking at the forecast. So it's going to come down to who plays the best golf, which is the best scenario, I think. There's no sob stories out there for people getting caught out on the wrong side of the draw. So,
okay,
make your decisions and stick with your convictions, I think.
Yeah. If you've made it this far and you haven't played DraftKings yet, you're clearly keen. So don't forget that that free no-deposit $5,000 contest for new customers this week, new players. So, yeah, I put a link in the description if you are listening to this on podcast. And, of course, it's available at Golf Betting System. Just look on the right-hand nav. You will find that particular opening deal. It's been a pleasure as always, Paul. I'm really, really looking forward to this US Open. I think it's going to be an absolutely brilliant tournament. I've just got a feeling about it.
Yeah.
Even though I had Brooks in the PGA, there was something about it where it was almost, he was so far ahead it got a little bit tedious. I mean, clearly the finish was quite stressful in the end. But I've got a feeling that there isn't going to be a kind of runaway situation this week. I think there could be... All we want is a number of players that are fighting it out at the end, don't we? And, you know, if you've got DraftKings teams that are up there and reliant on those players, it's going to be exciting all time.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's got all the hallmarks of a cracking event, I think. And there's a lot of players playing some good golf at the moment. And there's a lot of players who aren't playing quite as good golf, but have got a decent Pebble Beach records who could also pop up and contend. So there's so many angles to explore this week. It does make it a fascinating event, I must say.
Well, thank you for your time. It's been much appreciated.
Yeah, no worries. Best of luck
with your teams. DraftKings pod in history. All I will say is thank you for those questions as well. And thank you to all the listeners, as ever. The feedback this week and just the visitor numbers we've had at Golf Betting System have been very, very strong, very, very, very encouraging. So thank you to one and all. We will see you again next week. We're back to the standard format of European Tour and PGA Tour next week. But as ever at Golf Betting System, we will be with you then. So thank you for listening and see you again soon. Bye.